Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. A frail, soft-spoken school teacher is spotted with a bicycle near where a girl has disappeared. He's arrested and beaten up by police in an abandoned warehouse. But when the violent police interrogation is posted on YouTube, the suspect is freed. The cop, played by Lior Ashkenazi, decides to teach the suspect a lesson. But before they know it, both the cop and the suspect find themselves locked up in a basement in a cabin in the woods. A vigilante, the victim's father, decides to get revenge for what happened to his daughter. To find out the truth, he turns to excruciating torture. The cop, the suspect, the vigilante. Which of these men is the biggest wolf of all? A new Israeli horror movie looks at the rise in torture and violence supposedly being used by good people for good causes. The film is called Big Bad Wolves. Quentin Tarantino called it his favorite film of 2013. It follows co-directors Aaron Kashalis and Navot Papachatos' previous strange horror film called Rabies. Big Bad Wolves is opening today in Toronto and across Canada, and I'm very pleased to have here by telephone the film's co-director, Aaron Kashalis, to tell us more. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
So, Big Bad Wolf is a suspense horror movie in which ordinary people do horrible things in a very nonchalant manner. Would you call this a comedy?
Yeah, it's a very, very brutal comedy. I don't know if that's the kind of film that makes you laugh, you know. I don't know how to describe it. But when we wanted to write this film, we were afraid to do something that there's only one dimensional and only one tone, you know, to be only dramatic. And we wanted to, you know, play with the theme of vengeance and to take it to the absurd. And I guess when you go to the absurd with a vengeance film, you go into comedy. But I don't know if you can call it a pure comedy. It's a black comedy, a very dark comedy, a bloody comedy.
So the movie's never explicit in saying so, but it shows the torture techniques learned in the military. Would you say service in the military has affected people's everyday lives and made them inured to this kind of violence?
When we wrote the film, we decided to make a film about, you know, to touch the Israeli mentality, because when you live in Israel, you don't notice that, but everybody who went to the army knows how to, you know, I have to say it, you know how to kill a guy. Yeah, with a rifle, yeah, not with a saw or a chainsaw or a blowtorch, but you know to do things in order to protect yourself. And then you don't do anything, you hope not to do anything with this knowledge while you're in the army. And then you go into, you know, you become a civilian again. And then it's just in the back of your head, you have it. So we want to make a film about a macho society that, you know, nobody uses it in his everyday life, but once he needs to, you know, get out all something or to know, learn something about his daughter being kidnapped or murdered, or somebody wants to take vengeance on somebody else, so all the instincts just kicks in. So we decided to make the kind of film that everybody went to the military and everybody knows how to do things. And when you see the generations in the movie, there are a couple of generations, the grandfather, the father, you can see that every generation is even brutal than the one that follows that generation. So that's the kind of film or mentality we want to depict in the film.
Recently, I read a police procedural novel recently published in English called Lineup by Liad Shoham. And it's about a man who is mistakenly charged with rape since he was seen lurking near the scene of the crime. The reason I bring it up is that the novel and your movie both say that people have lost their faith in the police as well, police corruption. Why don't people trust the police anymore? Was there an incident that sparked this?
Just now, you know, we have like this big thing with the corruption in our police. So I guess that the movie is even more relevant these days. But I think that, you know, during the last, I think, 20 years or 10 years, everybody has like this lack of, in Israel, I have to say,
right,
in the establishment. I think that there are a lot of people here. You know, you read the news about the president, one of our presidents, former presidents, you know, harass his secretaries. And
right.
you learn about police corruption, and you read all about it in the news. So you have a president, you have a prime minister now, has you know, accounts in offshore banks, and you know, you read so much about your president, your prime minister, your cops. So you can't really put a lot of faith in these systems anymore. So I think it comes into your writing, and it's in your subconscious that you're living in a state that there's a lot of problems. But I don't think it's just the situation in Israel. I think that a lot of countries nowadays have this problem.
Certainly. But would you say there's a climate of fear in Israel right now, or generally speaking?
I don't know.
By climate of fear, I mean, like, are people convinced always to be afraid something terrible is going to happen?
I think we are a paranoid country. We always live in fear. But that's it's a bipolar state, because you don't just live in fear. It's both things. You don't fear anything if you're an Israeli. You really don't fear anything if you're Israeli. But at the same time, you fear of everything. Everybody's out to get you. We're always, you know, running away, or a fear of being bombed by some country, a neighbor country or something like that. Because we did have our share of wars and terror attacks and you name it in history. So I think in our DNA is to be a little bit paranoid that everybody's out to get you. And I think this is the kind of thing we try to talk about in our film, that there's this sense of paranoia in every one of our citizens.
The characters in the movie are all so horrible. The only one that's portrayed as a normal, rational human being, a peaceful man, is a Palestinian Israeli who appears on horseback. But the terrible people in the movie are afraid of him. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we want to make like an inside joke about, you know, most of the Arab characters in the Israeli cinema are portrayed either as terrorists, you know, or victims of the occupation, but they're never being portrayed as an everyday guy or a noble horseman or something like that. You have only these two depictions. So we decided to make an inside joke in the midst of a very brutal torture porn comedy horror film, that a lot of Israelis doing bad things to each other, the most beautiful, elegant, noble character will be that of an Arab man riding along on a horse. And we wanted that to happen in the midpoint of the film, because it will be so shocking that, hey, there's an Arab on a horse and everybody's afraid of him. But, you know, the guy who's afraid of him is just, you know, pull the nail of someone else's toe. So it's really, you know, it has a lot of irony into it. And I think we wanted to make that kind of statement about the paranoid state of Israel, that, you know, everybody thinks that the Arabs are going to get him. In the meanwhile, doesn't, you know, pay notice or pay attention to what horrible things he is doing in his own basement.
Right.
I think that was, you know, point to the character of the Arab.
Let's talk about horror movies in general. Yours is an unusual movie, but it shares certain settings with a typical slasher movie. Just like in your previous movie, Rabies, you turn to, for lots of scenes, to the cabin in the woods. Where do you get the idea of the cabin in the woods?
I think that both Navod and I really love fairy tales. Because we feel that fairy tales are the best horror films you can make. And I think that our parents, without knowing, told us a lot of bedtime stories that really are obscene. You know, every fairy tale is about a wolf or a witch who wants to eat you, swallow you. And they're all stories about pedophiles.
Right.
So when we decided to write both Rabies and Big Bad Wolf, we decided to make like a fairy tale kind of forest. You know, it could be seen as a laboratory of the Israeli situation. So you have both fairy tales and some of the, you know, reality of Israel in it. So the cabin in the woods, of course, is the cabin, you know, the Hansel or Gretel cabin. And you have the trail of candies in Big Bad Wolf and the little
right.
girl in the red dress.
She's the Red Riding Hood.
So we really wanted to make a revenge film against our parents who read us such horrible tales before we went to sleep. And the cabin, this is their punishment. Being inside the cabin they created in our minds while we were children.
That's very interesting. You also pay homage to, I know Quentin Tarantino likes your films a lot. He said it was his favorite film of the year. The opening scene seems a lot like the scene from Reservoir Dogs, only this time it's the cops torturing the suspect, not the criminals torturing a cop. Was that a direct reference to Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the, you know, in the setting, because when you go and through locations, you want to find the best scenery to play your scene in. So you think about movies that you saw, and when you see, you know, the warehouse in Big Bad Wolf in Reservoir Dogs, it's really great scenery to have, like, four guys in it. But you can see a lot of, I don't know if it's an homage, but you can see a lot of citations, and I don't know, it's in our back, it's in the back of our heads, because in the last 20 years, I think the two directors we really like to see every work they're doing is Quentin Tarantino and the Coen brothers. They're our idols, they're kind of Bibles we put beside our beds. So I guess it's, you know, it's in our mind.
Your movie deals with brutal violence. When do you decide when to turn the camera away from the scene, and when do you keep it on?
I think we're what you do, you try to make like a scheme of the audience reactions and to think what they're going to think. If, are they going to show it now? And then if you think the answer is yes, so don't show it, and vice versa. We like, you know, you have to play with the expectations of the audience, so you never keep it dull. You know, you have to have dynamics, even to a horror thriller, because I feel that in a lot of recent years, in a lot of horror movies, in American horror movies, you don't get that sense, because they just show you everything. They show you everything from start to finish, and then you have no element of surprise. So in Rabies, we start to jingle with that idea that you don't always show everything, and then show it, you know, and that keeps the audience alert, so they think whether I'm going to see it this time or not. And also it has to do with morality, because if you think it's not appropriate, like we didn't show anything bad happened to children in this movie, but the film talks about it. You know, the father reads an entire fairy tale about what happens to his kid, but we never show it. So we try to play decent. We try to play fair with the audience. We don't show something that is pornography or obscene or morally incorrect. And when it's okay to show it just for the sake of, I can say entertainment, but shock value, we show it. Because we didn't want to make a film about torturing, that you don't show any of the torturing, because then you just make it easier for the audience to, you know, empathize with the protagonist, which is really the villain. So we didn't want that kind of film. We want to make films about the monstrosity of the humankind. So we decided to show some of the things very brutally.
And I've heard that you said that Rabies was the first horror film made in Israel. Why did you turn to horror as your genre?
I think that the most, I think that that you can show your craftsmanship best as a starting director in the horror trope, because you have to know everything about sound design, everything about editing, everything about cinematography, and even acting, because if anything is a bit, you know, not in tune, they will see it. So I think that a lot of directors, famous directors, started that way. You know, Brian De Palma and even Spielberg, you know, you see their first movies, they all turned into trying to do horror films as their first films, because I think it shows, it's the best showcase of your abilities as a director.
So does that suggest that you're going to move on from horror, or will you stick with horror?
I will do, I think Navod and I want to do, you know, something in every genre. We did slasher movie with Rabies, we did a revenge horror thriller with and comedy in Big Bad Wolf, and the next one is supposed to be in spaghetti western set in Israel. So
a spaghetti one?
Yeah. Sounds Once Upon a Time in Palestine.
Very interesting.
I think we just want to jiggle with everything and, you know, do a lot of surprises with every genre.
Thanks a lot for speaking with me, Aaron.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Aaron Kashalis about his new film, Big Bad Wolves, which opens today in Canada. This is Daniel Garber of the Movies for CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.